Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 21st of December. Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program live from Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura, bringing you the social media news and comments on our stories.
Coming up, tough-talking Gambian President Yahya Jammeh says he won't leave power. What does this mean for the president-elect? We hear from a Gambian senior journalist.
The general feeling or mood of the people is that it is time for him to go. The verdict of the Independent Electoral Commission is correct, and he should just accept his fate.
And we'll also be reading out some of the comments you posted on the topic on our Facebook page.
Security talks dominate German's political debate as police claim to have gotten some clues on the suspect of the Monday attack on the Christmas market in Berlin.
The security of our country needs to be given more priority. Part of that is that we do not allow anyone to enter our country if that person's identity or nationality is not clear.
But before we get there, here is a chance to hear what's happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. German Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière has confirmed that the authorities have identified a new suspect in Monday's deadly truck attack on a Christmas market in Berlin. The minister said he was a suspect, but not necessarily the assailant. De Maizière declined to confirm media reports that the suspect was a Tunisian asylum seeker with links to the Islamic extremist scene. The Christmas market, targeted in the attack, which claimed 12 lives, will reopen tomorrow. The need for tighter security is being felt not only in Germany, but also elsewhere in Europe. Marina Bresciani is the organiser of the Brussels Christmas market in Belgium.
We are very sensitive and we are careful, and we talk every hour with the police and we are in contact with them. Then we set up some security measures.
In a related development, the European Commission, the EU's executive arm, has proposed tightening controls on cash and precious metals from outside the EU in a bid to shut down one route for the funding of militant attacks. The new rules would allow authorities to seize money where there are suspicions of criminal activity. EU Justice Commissioner Vieira Jourova.
The bank accounts of the suspects, for instance, these radicalized persons preparing the terrorist attack located in all the concerned member states, will have to be frozen within 48 hours maximum. This is a huge step forward for effective judicial cooperation.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Tensions were running high in the Democratic Republic of Congo on Wednesday, following the deaths of at least 20 people in protests against President Joseph Kabila's refusal to step down. Attention was also focusing on talks launched by the country's Catholic Church in the hope of finding a peaceful way out of the crisis. Germany's foreign ministry said on Wednesday talks on development assistance to the Democratic Republic of Congo had now been postponed indefinitely. France has said it may seek European Union sanctions against President Kabila. In Syria, aid agencies said on Wednesday that buses carrying evacuees have resumed their departure from the last rebel-held enclave of Aleppo. The civilians have been waiting in freezing temperatures since their evacuation ran into problems on Tuesday. And finally, to West Africa. In Ivory Coast, the Electoral Commission says that last weekend's parliamentary elections have returned the governing coalition of President Alassane Ouattara to power with 155 out of 255 seats. Voter participation was around 34%. Only about 6 million people had registered to vote, even though at least 10 million are believed to be of voting age. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
This is DW Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I am Wendy Kumwaura.
We start the program in The Gambia, where President Yahya Jammeh has said he will not step down. He has also condemned mediation efforts by the West African Regional Bloc, ECOWAS. ECOWAS last week visited the 51-year-old president to persuade him to leave power. His challenger, Adama Barrow, won the December 1st election is said to be sworn in on January 18th. But with Jammeh's strong words, Barrow's inauguration is not certain. Samsa is the managing editor of Foroya, a daily newspaper in The Gambia. He has been telling me how people have reacted to Jammeh's stern position.
Well, I think there is some apprehension, but the general feeling or mood of the people is that it is time for him to go. The verdict of the Independent Electoral Commission is correct, and he should just accept his fate. That position should be occupied by a person who is elected, and no one is destined to be in that position forever. That's the general feeling of people. They are seeing him more and more as a source of instability.
Now, let me ask you this. They're going ahead with the preparations for the inauguration come January 18th. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I also suppose is carried out by the Justice Ministry. What do we hear? What do we anticipate from the Ministry of Justice? Are the judges ready to conduct this ceremony?
Well, that I cannot give an answer to. They have not made... that is Barrow's camp, have not made any pronouncement on that. What they have indicated is that they have a committee that is responsible for preparation. I think the complication is that this takeover, one, is something which is new in the Gambia. The problem lies in the reaction of the president by rejecting the results. They agreed to have teams on both sides, and that these teams will work together and work out a process for peaceful transfer of power. But all of a sudden, he came up, rejected, and created a barrier.
I was speaking to Sam Sa of Foya newspaper in The Gambia.
And on the social media desk, we have George Samson, who are from Kagera in Tanzania, who's asking, when will African presidents learn to leave power without resisting?
We'll come back to that a little later, but first to Berlin. 2 days after the lorry attack on a Christmas market in Berlin, the identity of the attacker remains uncertain. Now, the debate among politicians is how such attacks could be prevented in the future. German's police seem to have identified the person who carried out the attack. The Monday attack left 12 people dead, including the original driver of the lorry, who was found dead inside the truck. Now, 48 people are still injured in hospital. From Berlin, Daniel Pelz reports.
The German website Spiegel Online reports that police investigators found an identity document inside the truck. According to the report, it belongs to Anis A., a 23-year-old Tunisian citizen. Germany's intelligence services had regarded him as a potential threat. They use this term for Islamist militants who are prepared to commit terrorist acts at any time. Police have launched a manhunt for Ali A. Police presence across the country has been beefed up after the attacks. Thomas de Maizière is Germany's federal minister for internal affairs.
We will protect Christmas markets even more in the future. That's what I have decided, together with the ministers for internal affairs of the provinces. We have also considered closing down Christmas markets, but we have decided against it. Christmas markets are a part of our culture. We are not going to move back in the face of terror. But there is no absolute safety, even if some experts are trying to suggest that.
Christmas markets were open across Germany on Wednesday, but the atmosphere remained gloomy in many places. In the capital, Berlin, the debate about possible consequences of Monday's attacks is raging. A number of politicians is calling for more video surveillance of streets, markets and public transport. They also want to give the police more rights to monitor phone and email communication. Germany's immigration policies are also in the spotlight again. Wolfgang Bosbach is a member of the Internal Security Committee of Germany's lower house of parliament. He told private television station NTV,
"Wir müssen der Sicherheit unseres Landes einen höheren
The security of our country needs to be given more priority. Part of that is that we do not allow anyone to enter our country if that person's identity or nationality is not clear. We have to know who is coming into our country. That is not populism. It's an appeal to fully implement our current laws."
Geltende Rechtslage konsequent anzuwenden.
Horst Seehofer, governor of Germany's southern province of Bavaria, is going even further. He called for a complete overhaul of Germany's immigration policies. Opposition politicians have denounced any demands to change immigration laws. Ulla Jelpke, a member of parliament for the leftist Die Linke party, called it unethical and dangerous to use the attacks to fuel prejudices against refugees and other foreigners.
Daniel Pels in Berlin, and now to DR Congo, where security forces killed at least 20 demonstrators in clashes after President Kabila's term expired. Several others were arrested as they protested Kabila's hold on power. The killings took place in the capital Kinshasa and thousand city of Lubumbashi and other major towns. Now, political talks between the ruling party and opposition resumed this afternoon after stalling over the weekend. The talks are mediated by the Catholic Church. But do they still have any significance? And if so, what can we expect? I put this question to Pascal Kambale, a Congolese human rights lawyer based in Senegal. Take a listen.
President Kabila was quite obsessed with the date of the 20th of December, because for years, you know, political pundits and opposition activists and journalists and diplomats, they hyped, they talk a lot about 19 December being the last day, with some predicting even apocalyptic predictions about what that will mean, the fact that Kabila would leave the power, etc., etc. For President Kabila, there was an obsession of, I want to prove them wrong. I want the whole world to see that on the 21st of December, I will still be there. I'll still be in power. He threw everything, every capital he had, every political, diplomatic, and financial, and security, military. He put everything he could master into that date, into making sure that nothing will happen, even if it was at the expense of being seen as a repressive, authoritarian dictator, which is exactly how he is being more and more seen. Now that we are on the 21st of December, I think with that confidence, he is now more willing, that's my hope anyway, to sit and talk and make serious concessions.
Congolese human rights lawyer Pascal Kambale, and Wanjiku is itching to tell us what's happening on social media.
Of course, we have different opinions on different stories, starting with the Gambia's opposition responding to reports that they will prosecute the outgoing president, Yahya Jammeh.
And as we had in our first report, now we have Barrow planning his inauguration at the same time he's going to prosecute. Tell us more, Wanjiku.
Now that they have said they will not be prosecuting him, Kalule Joel from Kampala says, that's a great move. I think other countries with long-serving presidents should do the same. I think the fear of court charges and prison is one of the biggest reasons for them not leaving power. We should assure them of safety and protection after leaving power if we want Africa to get new leaders.
That's an interesting opinion from Kalule there, Wanjiku.
Indeed. Ebrima Bojang says that, I did not buy the idea that he will be prosecuted for the crimes committed. What I'm understanding here is that the public is afraid of Yahya not vacating the seat, and that's why people are trying to be nice by saying that he is not going to face the full force of the law, and we should be in no way intimidated or frightened by him. Those days are gone, and so we should wait and see if serving Yahya Jammeh will make these soldiers to kill their families on the ground. That is, of course, Ebrima's opinion there.
That's interesting what Ebrima is saying. Anything quickly that you can tell us before we wind up?
Of course. Osei Kwabena from Ghana says, another African tyrant, Yahya Jammeh, who voted for you? And this is quite interesting and very concerned.
Thank you very much, Wanjiku. We have to leave it at that. And we'll come back to some of those stories a little later. This is Africa Link, coming to you live from our DW studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Wanji Kumwaura from the social media desk.
Coming up next, the dangers of illegal migration as many are caught up at crossroads and on their way to the Mediterranean Sea.
The things I saw on the road, it's very difficult and there's no warning. Either you die after Agadez, either you die on the road or you come back.
We'll also be looking at your comments on the situation in Congo, the situation in Gambia, and much more.
But first, some news from the automobile world. 2016 was surely not a year of fun for the German car manufacturer Volkswagen. The 2015 emissions scandal, dubbed as the diesel dupe, rolled over to 2016. Volkswagen, that had always marketed its cars as low emissions, admitted to cheating emissions tests in the US. It recalled millions of its cars worldwide. But this has not stopped the manufacturers of brands like Audi, Golf and Passat. Today, Volkswagen opened a production line in Kenya. The launch was held at the Kenya Vehicle Manufacturers Vehicle Assembly in Thika, some 60 kilometers from the capital, Nairobi, from where Andrew Wasike reports.
Hopes were high as Germany's giant automaker officially opened its new production line in Thika, just outside of Nairobi. The company promised jobs for Kenyans. Speaking at the opening ceremony, Herbert Diess, chair of Volkswagen's management board for passenger cars, said that he was not only launching a new plant, but a big economic success story that will target the country's youth.
Here we want to grow by adapting successful business models to local needs and circumstances. We'll be successful here in Kenya. Volkswagen is well known for fostering sustainable development and creating new perspectives. We have been taking the lead in areas such as job creation, fair working conditions, training and education, and the development of small and medium-sized enterprises. The same will apply to our operations here in Thika.
Although Kenya's economic growth is well above the average for sub-Saharan Africa, many of the country's youth have been left without jobs, forcing many to flood the informal sector where earnings are very low. According to Diess, Volkswagen plans to engage African markets more closely and to source material locally.
And here we want to contribute to a broader economic development process. We also rely on African suppliers. Currently, we source catalytic converters, wheels, wiring harnesses, many produced in South Africa, Tunisia, Morocco, and Egypt. In other words, high-tech electronics made in Africa. Altogether, the Volkswagen Group sources products valued at 1.3 billion euro per year in this region. That makes Volkswagen a strong and reliable partner of the African continent.
Even though the automaker touched on issues that many Kenyans were hoping to hear, such as providing employment to its youth, Volkswagen failed to mention how it plans to reduce vehicular emissions. Since September last year, Volkswagen has faced heavy criticism for violating and cheating on US emission regulations. The scandal has cost the company billions of dollars. According to the United Nations Environment Program, the state of air quality in East Africa has deteriorated in recent years. The press were, however, not permitted to ask any questions to that effect. Kenyan leader Uhuru Kenyatta, for his part, thanks Volkswagen for coming back to Kenya, saying it resonated well with his administration's stated policy to industrialize the economy.
So today is a great day for some of us because it's the beginning once again of Kenya's industrialization journey. I want to thank the VW Group for their decision to once again reinvest in Kenya. And this bodes well with my own government's stated policy to industrialize our economy in order to build Kenya.
President Kenyatta affirmed his administration's commitment to nurturing a vibrant automotive sector that will create jobs for the youth and accelerate the country's economy.
Andrew Wasike in Nairobi.
On the spot.
Now, Niger has become a classic transit country for refugees from West Africa on their way to Europe. Via bus stations in Mali and the north of Niger, migrants pay smugglers to help them get to Libya and finally reach the Mediterranean coast. But recently, an increasing number of migrants on the journey have been turning around and heading home, either because they've run out of money, been arrested or experienced violence along the way. Through its transit centers, the International Organization for Migration is helping those willing to return home. In Niger alone, it has looked after 3,500 returning migrants since the start of the year. Yulia Henrichman visited the center in the capital from where she filed this report, now presented by Leah Albrecht.
For many of the West African migrants, this is the second time they are passing through Niger. They attempted the journey to Europe but didn't succeed. Exhausted and angry, they turn around to make their way home, crossing through Niger once again. At the International Organization for Migration in Niamey, they are offered shelter, some food and a place to sleep. Many of them have had a difficult journey with unpleasant experiences. Some have been in prison. Samba Alisai is one of the migrants coming from Mauritania.
They hit us and treated us badly. We were only given food once a day. It was hard.
When the migrants arrive, each one is asked where he comes from, which route he took, and whether he still has any of his papers or if everything was lost in the desert. Abu Kamara from Liberia left home 2 months ago. He didn't tell his wife and two children that he was trying to go to Europe. Now he just wants to go home.
The things I saw on the road, it's very difficult and there's no warning. We make this adventure only to succeed. Either you die after Agadez on the way to Tripoli, either you die on the road, or you come back.
It takes days, sometimes weeks, to get all the necessary documents in order to go home. While they are waiting, the migrants rarely venture outside the transit center. The staff at the International Organization for Migration sometimes feel they are reaching their limits. Monica Shiriak has only been working here for a few weeks. A deaf-mute man wants her advice. He asks if she can help find a job for his friend who has reached Italy. But that's not what the organization is there for.
Most of them went to Europe illegally on boats through the desert with smugglers. We can't really say, go on, try it. That's why we also try to integrate the people who come here, so they don't attempt the journey again.
But can they really persuade the would-be migrants to stay at home? They may have failed to reach Europe this time, but many still yearn to go there. Here's Abu Kamara again.
If I want to go to Europe,
If I go to Europe, then I will try to get there legally. I won't take an illegal route. I want to take the legal process to go to Europe.
Few of them wish to repeat the journey through the desert with the smugglers. They now hope they can find jobs and be accepted back into their families.
A report by Yulia Henrichman.
Living Planet Africa.
World over, countries are fighting to reduce their national emissions. All is aimed at combating causes of climate change. In Africa, Senegal is leading the way to become a solar-producing country. By December 2017, seven renewable energy projects will be created across the country, and by 2020, a wind farm northeast of Dakar is expected to be operational. But the women of Noto Dambasi village won't wait that long. They have already started their own project that lights up people's homes with solar lamps. Emmanuel Landesi with the details.
Four women in colourful dresses sit under the shade of a tall mango tree at the entrance of Nuto Jombas village. On the floor mat on the dusty ground lies a pile of money, which the women are busy counting. These women are part of an all-female collective of about 3,000 members from 42 neighbouring villages. The way it works is that they buy small solar-powered lamps in bulk and resell them. And today they're counting the profits, Hadi explains.
They are affordable. Even though we live in an area where people don't have much money, they do everything to buy them. We have definitely seen our profits increase, which means we can get more lamps to resell.
The portable lamps are shaped like flowers with bright yellow petals. They're designed to hang around the neck or on a hook. On one side is a small solar panel that, if left to charge for 5 hours in the sun, can produce more than 50 hours of light at the dimmest setting or 4 hours at its brightest. These lamps are vital in a country where 43% of urban households do not have access to electricity. In rural areas, it's as high as 70%. That means for most people, once the sun sets, their households are plunged into darkness. Chores and homework are often finished off by candlelight. Without light, conditions are hard, says Aram Ndjai, the eldest of the women's collective and matron at the nearby health centre.
One night, a girl left her village to go to TS because she was in labour. But she only got as far as our village. It was dark. We have no electricity. Except I had my solar lamp, so I put it around my neck and I was able to help her give birth.
The solar lamps were invented by a German solar company, Little Sun. Its aim is to empower rural communities by providing business opportunities and access to electricity, as Nafi Gay from Little Sun explains.
To create a business, you need funds. And if you don't come from a family that is capable of helping you financially, you need to go to the bank. And we know that banks are not always a solution because they need guarantees. And so we come in to offer young people the possibility to sell our lamps and to make a benefit from their sales, which helps also to combat unemployment.
While Little Sun offers communities off-grid and small-scale energy solutions at the national scale, Senegal is also starting to transition to cleaner energy.
Emmanuel Landis in Tier, Senegal.
And just to bring you up to speed with what's happening on our Facebook page, we have a fabulous video there.
I would like to know which one that is, Wanjiku.
Well, it's one that shows an all-female Sudanese band, and the girls are seated somewhere underneath a tree just
all
singing their hearts.
All female in Sudan.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And Hassan Agri says to this video that he loves the song and the diversity in the band. It shows true mixture of Sudanese people. And we also have Jay Achie who says their music is beautiful. You too, dear listener, can also watch it on our Facebook page and leave your thoughts on what you think of it.
So but you think that, so you want to tell me that the video is actually composed of more than one Sudanese ethnic group, the ladies?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
And they are quite diverse and they are having fun from what you can see on the video, actually just singing a cappella, and they have beautiful voices.
Okay.
But back to today's stories. I am still reading your comments on Facebook and we have messages coming in from for the tragic attack that happened in that occurred in Berlin on Monday evening at the Christmas market.
There's been a lot of messages coming in there. Tell me some of them. I know people are still expressing their deep sorrows there.
Absolutely. Nigel said, it's a sad thing to see it happen. We just pray that nothing as such happens again. May the lost souls rest in peace. And we also have a comment from Isaac Ehoza Godwin from Liberia who says, the news has shocked so many of us. All we can do now is grieve with the families of the bereaved. May the Lord heal their broken hearts.
It's a grieving moment indeed, and our condolences go out to the families and friends of those who have lost their loved ones at this time of the year.
Indeed. We also have comments on DRC Congo, and we know that Joseph Kabila refused to step out of power after his term expired on the 19th. And this has caused deaths and arrest after protests broke out. And we have Baba Ghana from Nigeria who says that Joseph Kabila's refusal to step down has shown the backwardness of democracy in Africa. We hope the UN and ECOWAS would do something to prevent a political crisis.
Too much about that. I know there are quite lots of comments, but sorry, Wanjik, we have to leave it at that because we've run short of time.
Indeed.
And with that, we come to the end of the program. Thank you so much for joining us and for listening.
I'm Wanjiku Mwaura.
And I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet. For more news, visit our page, dwafrica.com/.